Psalm 131, a song of ascents of David. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child, my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. I must confess something tragic happened to me 2 weeks ago before coming up to the pulpit. I got in a car accident, and since then, the opposite of this psalm has been my heart. At 9 o'clock, before I was set to preach, I got T-boned, and since then, a calm and quieted soul was hard to get to. It was a hard destination. And maybe you're here today, and something greater than a car accident has hit you this past week. Something that is more of a slow burn has been happening to you since the beginning of the year. Even still, I believe that this psalm is for you. Maybe things have been all gravy. It's all been great. Even still, now's the time to calm and quiet our souls. This morning, the main idea of Psalm 131 is this: Christian maturity seeks contentment in the Lord's presence. I'll say that again for note takers. Christian maturity seeks contentment in the Lord's presence. In other words, to be one who is a weaned child is one who seeks to be with our Heavenly Father, to be with our God. Our psalm is one that is a psalm of ascent. What that means is this is one of 15 songs that they would sing, the Israelites would sing as they go up the Temple Mount to worship at the temple, whether that be by sacrifice or worshiping to be close to God's presence. So you can feel that as they would sing this song, they are posturing themselves in a place of worship. We seek to do the same thing here at Emmaus through our liturgy. Our call to worship is calling us all the things that we pick up throughout the week that makes our hearts heavy, that make our eyes raise very high, to dump it all out and to seek Him and occupy ourselves with the task at hand of worship. Even still, our liturgy, we take time to have a calm and quiet confession. We sit in silence for this purpose. So, I would say that for us, as we seek contentment in the Lord's presence to be mature Christians, we will look at this psalm in each of its three verses. And each verse has some sort of a theme. The first verse is a negative that is actually for the positive. In other words, I don't do these things, and that's a very good thing, right? Some of you may have young children, and if I were to ask them if they're obedient children, they say yes. And I'd say, why? They'd probably say, because I don't do this, and I don't do that, and I don't do this. I don't spill milk. I don't talk out of turn. I don't interrupt mommy and daddy. A lot of the don'ts are actually positive things, and we see that in the first verse. In the second verse, it is the positive. I have calmed and quieted my soul. It is doing something with the positive intact. And the third verse is very different, because you notice the commentary of 1 and 2 is David talking about himself to God. And in verse 3, it moves on to the plural, to a command to the people, to the covenant people, Israel. Hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. So the first verse, the theme would be conceit. The theme is conceit. Says, O Lord, my heart is not lifted up, or as the King James Version says, my heart is not haughty or proud, in other words. And my eyes are not raised too high, As the King James Version says, they're not lofty. My eyes are not lofty. These succinct words that we don't really use that often anymore, but I think are a little bit better than not lifted up or not raised too high, because they give some emphasis on the conceit or the pride of our hearts. And David is saying, my heart's not that way. He's coming to the Lord in all humble honesty, saying, my heart is not lifted up. My heart is not haughty. I'm not coming with a proud heart. My eyes are not raised too high. I'm not looking at what would be considered a lofty thing. The conceited theme begs us to ask, what does this mean for us? The conceited theme asks us, is our heart lifted up to something that it shouldn't be? Are our eyes lofty and raised too high? Do we occupy ourselves with things that are too great and too marvelous for us? I'm reminded of Christopher Marlowe's Dr. Faustus. I don't know if you know the story of Dr. Faustus, but it's kind of a dark tale that really forces the reader to wrestle with the pride of life and positioning yourself correctly in the order of being. Dr. Faustus was bored with things like law, logic, theology. He wanted more. He wanted more, and so he struck a deal with the devil for 24 years of his life. The next 24 years of his life, this devil, Mephistopheles, would be his servant. And after that, the devil would take him to hell. Faustus was willing to make this deal so that he could have power, magical power, beyond all that he knew. The 24 years were up, and he was dragged to hell. That's the opposite, and we ask ourselves, can we say like David, I'm not being conceited. I'm not being proud. The good news is that we can answer honestly. We can look at the interior life, at our hearts, and look at what is occupying our time, what is occupying our search history, what is occupying our bank account, the funds that we pile in, or the things that we pay for. We can see these things and how they affect our inner life. We can see how and what makes our heart pitter-patter and beat so fast. We can see what our eyes are drawn to, what we're looking at. And of course, the good news is not only as a Christian do we get to look at this and have the introspective view of what does this mean for us, but we also get to look at the Lord Jesus Christ and know that he is the one that this verse is talking about. That he is the one whose heart was not haughty. He is the one whose eyes were not raised too high. He is the one who occupied himself with his mission, seeking and saving the lost. Maybe you're here today and you don't know Jesus Christ. Maybe this sounds too good to be true. I want to encourage you. The goodness and kindness of our Lord Jesus, that when we look at this verse and we say Jesus fulfills Psalm 131 as one who is not conceited and one who is completely contented and one who commands to the people of God to hope in the Lord because he himself is our hope, that you can lay down whatever your heart is desiring, that you can turn your eyes away from something else and look to the marvelous King Jesus. You see, Jesus had no conceit. When he was tempted by Satan in the desert, he rejected all of the things that were offered him. Power, food, glory. He is better than Faustus. Instead of seeking a deal to be made, he rejected the deals that were coming his way. His eyes were set. Remember, We just went through Mark. There's a point in time where he turns towards Jerusalem and his eyes are set on the task at hand. His eyes were always set on that task. The task of saving us from our sin by substituting himself in our place, by dying the death that we deserve to die. Jesus perfectly had no conceit. As we move to the second verse, we see that it's speaking positively about contentment, where conceit would be reworking the Lord's prayer to my kingdom come, my will be done. This contentment seeks the truth of the Lord's prayer, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And it's all, again, within the interior life. Notice that. We go back a little bit to my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised. I'm not occupying my time, my schedule, these things. Some of them look outwardly, but they are all speaking inwardly to our interior life. And verse 2, as we look at contentment, he makes it so when he speaks of his soul. But I have calmed and quieted my soul. One pastor, on reflecting on the simile, the metaphor of the weaned child and his mother, says this about calming and quieting our soul. He said, the transition from a sucking infant to a weaned child, from squalling baby to quiet son or daughter, is not smooth. It is stormy and noisy. It is no easy thing to quiet yourself. Sooner may we calm the sea or rule the wind or tame a tiger than quiet ourselves. It'd be easier to calm the sea than to quiet ourselves. Maybe you feel that this morning. Maybe you feel the tension of your life, of your interior life. When a bit of quiet comes, it must be interrupted with a video or a text message or a conversation. Or looking up that thing on the internet because you were wondering about how something happened or who's in that new movie or who your sports team just picked up or defeated in a game. But to calm and quiet ourselves, to have the interior life that is calmed and quiet. It isn't like a light switch where it just happens one day. It flips. It's slow. And it's rocky. In other words, there are times when you can be calm and quiet, and then the bad thing happens, right? Then the phone call that you didn't expect was happening. Or your child is suddenly hurt or sick. Or news of a loved one that suddenly died. Maybe it's being blindsided and being let go from work. All of these things, they show what's within. I had a principal that at the start of every school, he'd bring us to the assembly, and it was so, he did the same thing every year. We'd be there in the auditorium. The seniors were up front. He'd have this cup, and he'd say, what's in the cup? I'd say, I don't know what's in the cup. Then he'd swirl it around, and water would eventually spill out of the cup. And he'd say, what's in the cup? And they'd say, water. He'd say, how do you know? Because when you shook it, that's what came out. In the same way, when these things happen in our lives, these tragedies, it's an opportunity for us to show what's inside of us. And yet, it takes the progression of moving from tragedy to tragedy, of showing this from happening. It's very much like a child, a baby, an infant who needs mother's milk, who doesn't know what's wrong, but knows it will be soothed by being with mom. It's like an infant that needs nourishment and comfort and the shushing in someone else to calm and quiet the infant. But eventually, over time, that child grows and is weaned. And such is the metaphor that David uses here. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. Not a nursing child with its mother to be calmed and quieted by another. Rather, I am calmed and quieted because I know when the next meal's coming. I know mom and dad won't let it not happen. I know that if I have a need, where to go, but I also know that I am the one that can voice that need. I have some agency and some responsibility as a weaned child. I'm learning to walk. I've gone from crawling and I'm walking now. And what does it say? It's like a weaned child with its mother. In other words, it's not one who is in need of mom, but just desires. Maybe you remember this as a child, or maybe you know this from having your own children. It's not the, I need help, I'm on the potty and I need your help. It's the walking up and just holding your hand. It's you're sitting on the couch reading a book and they crawl in under your arm. Maybe you did this as a child as well. Not because they need anything, not because you needed anything, but you just wanted to be with your parents. The same way, this is the maturity that I'm talking about when I say that Christian maturity seeks contentment in the Lord's presence. It's similar to the maturity that the author of Hebrews talks about. Now, he's actually getting on the audience. He's condemning them a bit when he says this, for though by this time you ought to be teachers. In other words, you ought to be cooking food for yourself. You need someone else to teach you again the basic principles of the oracles of God. You need milk, not solid food. For everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness since he is a child. But solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. He's saying the mature one is the one who is constantly practicing distinguishing good from evil. He says there is a maturity in being skilled in the word of righteousness. I think that's a challenge for us this morning. Are we skilled in the word of righteousness? And is it for the purpose of being with the Lord? Some of us in this room might be skilled in the word of righteousness, but we have to remember that our hearts should not be haughty, that our eyes should not be lofty. You may try to dig into this word and think, this will be very impressive to my friends and my family. This will get me points with the seminary people. This is exactly what the professor will say, good job, great, great work looking at that. I want to challenge us to say, if that's why we're reading the Bible, we need to go to the Lord humbly and say, oh Lord, take that from me. I want you. Teach me, Lord, to handle this skillfully because it's worth for my, it's worth to my soul. It's value to me calming and quieting myself so I can be with you. Yes, it is good for others, and we'll actually get to that in a moment because of the command that is given. Yet are you weaning your soul? Are you calmed and quieted by seeking God in His Word? Are you seeking something else? What's great is that quote that I gave earlier, it'd be easier to calm the sea than to quiet ourselves. Because we have a great and wonderful high priest who is an example to us, who did calm the sea, who did quiet himself, who though groaned in the Garden of Gethsemane, afterwards was like, a silent lamb led to the slaughter. The same way we can look to King Jesus in his perfect contentment and the contentment that he had being calmed and quieted. And we can follow him, not so that we will be saved. We don't follow him in order to achieve something. We don't do this to be like him in order to achieve sainthood. No, we follow him because we have been transformed. Remember the terms that the atoning work of Jesus Christ does for us. Those who are brought out of darkness into marvelous light. It is a transformation. Those who were dead and who are now alive, it is a transformation. And because of that transformation, we're not seeking to do things so that God will be pleased with us in order to save us. We're seeking to do these things to be with God, like a weaned child with its mother. And in so much, because of that, we can follow the perfectly content Son of God, the Son of God by nature, not by grace. We're all sons by the grace of God. We're all children of God by the grace of God, but he is a son by his nature. And we get to follow him because he transforms us, stepping into our place, being perfectly content. Our last verse is interesting because it moves from David talking amongst himself and God, of praying to God, to a command for the covenant people of God. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. The prescription for all that he's talking about is hope, because ultimately that's what he's contented in. He's contented in the hope of God. That God is the one who will make sure that his heart is not lifted up, that his eyes aren't raised too high, that it is God by which he wants to be with so that he will calm and quiet his soul. It's the hope, ultimately, of Jesus Christ, the one who has come and taken our place. The prescription is for hope, and the reason he can do this is because he went up and is now coming down. It's much like the medieval theologians, they often looked at what's overlooked in the book of Genesis, of Jacob's ladder. Jacob laid down and had a dream, and there's this giant staircase or ladder, as it says. And God speaking to him, and on the ladder, moving up and down, ascending and descending the ladder, are angels. And the medievals often interpreted that these angels represented our souls. That our souls move to heaven and back to earth. In other words, they move to heaven to be with God. Like verse 2 says, a weaned child with its mother, and yet they move back down to earth for the people of God. In other words, as they are moved in the presence of God, they're called back down to share that with one another. And that's exactly what we see David doing. He is praying and speaking of being close to God. And as he comes down the ladder, he says, O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. Hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore, for he is good and faithful. It's like when the Israelites would recall all of the goodness of God and say, I will trust in you because you're the one who brought us out of Egypt. You parted the Red Sea. You fed us in the desert. You brought us into our holy land. They recount these things in the same way we can recount the goodness of these things, of God's work in our life. So from this time forth and forevermore, we will hope in him. Why? Because of all of the goodness that he's given to us. Because of the saving work of Jesus Christ. Because when things went poorly, he was there. He did not change. Because although I was so wanting to melt into a puddle after that one phone call, he was firm. Because I was frantic after this terrible thing happened to my child. He was steadfast. And we know that we can hope in him from this time forth and forevermore, whenever something else is going to happen. Because the calm and quieted soul is not just for when the tragedy strikes. Calm and quieted soul is also in the mundane, for the happy, the prosperous time. Calm and quieted soul is not just in preparation of tragedy, but it's from this time forth and forevermore. This morning, I have three pastoral charges for us from Psalm 131. The first being this: Christian, intentionally work on the interior life. Intentionally work on the interior life. What do I mean by that? I mean, we can actively practice calm and quiet setting for our calm, quiet soul. Yes, when you study the Bible and you pray, don't simply just end with, here's the list of all my needs. But take time, sit 10, 15 minutes in silence. Your heart's posture saying, Lord, what did this text teach me about you and being with you? Lord, what did this text teach me about myself and what you're calling me to be? And I know it's hard, because in our day and age, there's something. There's something that our mind is asking. As soon as you get 10 seconds, not 10 minutes in, you're reaching for your cell phone. As soon as 15 moments has passed, much less 15 minutes, our minds have ventured off to what I'm going to do later that morning, or that evening, or that week. But intentionally focusing and striking our attention back to being with God, we can intentionally work on our interior life in this. We can do that also by fasting from stumbling blocks to our interior life. How often do we hear that, I wish I wouldn't doom scroll, or I'm being just onslaughted by entertainment? It is okay. I want to give you permission. It's okay to get rid of social media. It's okay to cut off your right hand if it's going to cause you to stumble. It is also a-okay for you to cancel some subscription service. If you find yourself just constantly there, it's okay to do that. Second pastoral charge is this: if the first is to intentionally work on the interior life, the second is for the Christian as well, to take inventory of how you have matured in your Christian walk since your salvation. In other words, it's taking time to look back on your infancy and seeing how the Lord has been faithful, how he's grown you. How, if something in the past week were to happen 10 years ago or 4 years ago, what would my reaction have been? And what was it now? I praise God for how he's grown me. So take inventory or recall or memorialize or remember how God has moved you, how he has helped calm and quiet your soul, how you've gone from an infant, suckling babe, to a weaned child. And lastly is this, pastoral charge number three. The first is intentionally work on the interior life, and the other is to take inventory of God's work in your life. The third is this: encourage the body of believers with what the Lord has given you. You can come down the ladder. Or like Moses, who went up to receive the law, he brought it back down to the people. You can come down from your times of the interior life, your times of the contemplative life, to encourage the body of believers with what the Lord has given you. And yet, with a heart that is not haughty and eyes that are not too raised, of course you know. Of course you know that there are going to be others who don't need it. And there will be others who do need it. Now don't think that David thought, hey, O Israel, you all have such busy hearts. You all have loud souls. He knew there were those who didn't, who were more calmed and more quieted than he was. And yet, it's still necessary to give the prescription, to give the help to others. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. You encourage the body of believers with the other first two pastoral charges, with the work you've done on the interior life, and with where God has brought you. Those remembering things are constant reminders to others. So this morning, as we move on, as we look to communion, we see this is a time to even work on our interior life. This is a time where we take bread and the cup and we remember and we participate and we hope. We remember what Christ has done for us and the breaking of his body and the spilling of his blood. And we participate that that grace is for us believers. We participate by taking it in, by wanting more of it and more of him. And we hope for the day that we are fully in his presence.